Now, the adaptation into a novel, the thing we're remembering here on the 20th anniversary, began almost as an accident. For me, Ender's Game was done. I'd finished the story. It was complete. I had no desire to write a novel, but I did have another novel that I was working on called Speaker for the Dead. And Speaker for the Dead, which ended up also winning the Hugo and Nebula Award, though it's not as popular a book mainly because it's much more for grown-ups. It doesn't have a kid protagonist. It's a much slower beginning book. But many people think a better one. I won't argue with them. My idea of a happy future is a world in which every household in America is riven by dissent over whether Ender's Game or A Speaker for the Dead is the better of the two books. But for now, I'll settle for we'll talk about Ender's Game. But I was working on Speaker for the Dead, and what brought that book to life was the realization this really works if the hero is Ender Wiggin after the fact. Only instead of being hailed as a hero, he is not. He's rejected because he wiped out all of the alien, all of this alien race. And so it was with that turnabout that I opened up the book Speaker for the Dead. The trouble was, if I included that turnabout as the opening of Speaker for the Dead, it took me 20 or 30, 40, in one draft, 50 pages before I even got to the beginning of the story of Speaker for the Dead. It was a deadly, tedious opening. It wasn't working. But Speaker for the Dead was under contract to Tom Doherty at Tor. So at the time, I was working for Compute Magazine as their book publisher, and on their behalf, I was attending, well, now it's BEA, the Book Expo America, but at the time, it was the ABA, American Booksellers Association Convention, in Dallas, Texas. And I ran into Tom Doherty there and took him aside. We walked through the noisy convention floor, and I explained to him that in order to write Speaker for the Dead successfully as a novel, I needed to adapt Ender's Game first, solely in order to change the ending of Ender's Game in order to set up Speaker for the Dead. Well, in a handshake, in fact, not even literally a handshake, Tom Doherty said, same terms as Speaker for the Dead? I said, yes. And he said, great, it's done. And a few days later, my agent got a contract, we signed it, and instead of writing the next version of Speaker for the Dead, I sat down and started writing Ender's Game. Then I worked on fleshing out the story. I had already learned from my work on the novel Songmaster that the way to take a short story and adapt it into a novel is not to start with the short story as written and then tack a bunch of stuff onto the end. The way you do it is you go before the beginning of the short story, and you create a much wider world, and you develop the character much more thoroughly. Now, Ender's Game started with Ender, 10, 9 years old, the short story version. So I went back to when he was born, when he was so little that it was ridiculous to try to do a war novel about him. But it wasn't, not with Ender, and not with the situation in Battle School, and not with the emergency that the world was facing. So I started with Ender back on Earth before he ever got to Battle School, whereas the short story started when he first got command of his own army. And took it from there. I gave him a brother and a sister. They sort of grew like Topsy. They became much more important in the book than I ever planned. Peter and Valentine weren't even in the outline that I had, but they became vital to not only that story, but to the later books in the Ender series. And I really had fun writing this book. I was playing because I knew the real book was Speaker for the Dead. So I followed whims. The whole fantasy game, that just came out of nowhere. I was free associating. It's not Ender's brain you're seeing at work there. It's mine. So if you detect schizophrenia or some other vile mental disorder in the fantasy game, that's mine, not his. But by the time I was done, I knew I had something. In fact, about halfway through, I thought, this story is really working. This book is going to go somewhere. And I was modeling Ender, not the character, not the character attributes, but the way he talked, the level of language he used, on my then 5-year-old son, Jeffrey. And I thought, Jeffrey's going to read this book, and he's going to read it young. I don't want him to learn bad words from my book. And the book was thick with them. I had these kids talking the way little kids would talk, especially if they were in a military school setting. Lots of bad language, lots of blasphemy, and I was just uncomfortable with it. I thought, I don't want Jeffrey to learn these words from me or any other kid. So I went through, cleaned up the language. I left in all of the bathroom humor because, you can't write about kids honestly without having that there. But I made it so that no kid was going to learn bad language from me. And that was solely because I knew this book was going to be read by kids. Then I finished and sent the book off to my editor, who at the time was Harriet McDougall, who, by sheer coincidence, is the wife of Robert Jordan, the author of the Wheel of Time series, though at that time he was still writing Conan stories for Tom Doherty. The Wheel of Time had not started appearing. And so, you know, it's a very incestuous small world in science fiction. Harriet was thrilled with the book. She thought it was wonderful, and she was as excited as I was. They were so excited that Tom decided that as they started a new hardcover line, because at that time Tor was only a paperback publisher, they published nothing in hardcover, they were going to have their first novel in hardcover be Ender's Game in December of 1984. Well, this is what my ambition for this novel was at the time. I called up my editor and I said, Harriet, we can't release it. You know, I'm flattered to be the first hardcover, but we can't do that. If you put it out in December of 84, that's right at the end of the Hugo eligibility time period, the year. And if the year ends and they start nominating in as they do in January, no one will have read Ender's Game. Nobody buys a hardcover that comes out in December, certainly not science fiction readers. They're all poor. They wait till it comes out in paperback. So if you just wait and bring out the hardcover in January of 85, then it'll have the whole year in hardcover, and the paperback can come out before the nominations, and this book will have a chance at making the ballot. If you bring it out in hardcover in December, no chance. It'll just disappear as far as the awards are concerned. Well, she saw the reasoning of that. They brought out a book by another author, I believe Gordon Dixon, as their first book in December of their first hardcover in December of 84. And Ender's Game came out in January of 1985. And the eligibility worked as I had hoped. It had time for readers to discover it. And the result was that it was on the ballot and ended up winning the Hugo Award, which is what I was aiming for. I was stunned when it also won the Nebula Award. It seemed to me too popular a kind of novel, a novel too much aimed at the common denominator of readers to win the Nebula. So I was naturally thrilled when it won that award as well. And then Speaker for the Dead, the sequel, went on to win both awards also the following year. But I didn't set out to write a Hugo-winning book, but I was able to tell when I was finished with writing Ender's Game that it was the kind of story that would be in contention.